This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Morrow Wolf, joined in studio today by local playwrights Cynthia Hardiman, Michelle T. Johnson, and Teresa Legard, and they are going to share insights and experience with us today about their journey as playwrights. And particularly of interest, I believe, because, of particular interest, they are black women playwrights, which expands our conversation and informs our conversation, I am sure, in many, many different ways. So welcome, ladies, to Urban Connections and KKFI.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Now, you were on earlier in the week with Mark Manning, you mentioned, on his program, so you've got a feel for what we're about here at KKFI. We're a real grassroots, homegrown community of individuals who just love bringing all that spice and different flavor to the community. So, first of all, I'll give our listeners a little bit more information about our guest today. Cynthia Hardiman is a family services advocate by day and a playwright by night. She's the recent winner of Kansas City's 2013 Project Playwright 2 competition, and her plays have been seen at the Unicorns 2012 Gala Playwright Showcase and the 2012 Intensity Showcase at Fish Tank Performance Studio, and much more, and I'm sure she's going to tell us more about that. Also in studio today with us today is Michelle T. Johnson, who's a Kansas City-based local and national diversity consultant and speaker, and she has 3 published books on diversity and has a freelance column in the Kansas City Star under the pen name Diversity Diva, and she is the diversity coordinator at St. Paul's Episcopal Day School. Michelle is also a playwright whose plays have been produced in the Barn Players of Mission, Kansas, 2011 6x10 Festival, the 2012 Kansas City Fringe Festival, and by Potluck Productions. She was selected and featured playwright in the Unicorn Theater's Writer Showcase in February of 2013, and a lot more experience as a playwright and exposure here locally and nationally as well for Michelle T. Hardiman. And I'm going to refer to you, my sister Teresa Legard, as a facilitator of this group getting together, because you sort of initiated this. Thank you so much for that. Teresa is a writer, an editor, a poet, and a playwright. She's also a member of the Writers' Place, Kansas City's own literary community center. Her upcoming plays, The Birthday and To Bed, will be featured in the Kansas City Fringe Festival here in Kansas City in July as part of the production's Girl on Girl and More foreplay. So, ladies, tell us how you came to be playwrights. What is this inspiration, and what have you got coming up pretty soon that our community is going to have an opportunity to see? And I'll start with you, Cynthia Hardiman.
Playwriting came to me, I guess, through just having notebooks full of stories that I've written since I was a young child, just listening to the characters tell their stories, writing them down. I took a course at UMKC with Frank Higgins, playwriting course. And it just opened up a whole new world in the world of theater for me.
So were you, when you were a kid, did somebody read to you a lot? Did somebody say, you know, you can write stories as well? How did you start?
My mother read a lot. And so she read to us a lot, all different types of stories. So just that whole fantasy world in stories. Came to me, I guess, but I told stories, and people believed the stories that I told. So all that's how I knew that that I had something.
That you could do it. And I bet that was fun as a kid. You just go say something and people be like, and yeah, people believe.
Really?
I would have used that a lot, I think. And also in studio today, with us today, is Michelle T. Johnson. Michelle, tell us how you came to be a playwright.
Oh, God, I think like Cynthia, I grew up liking my stories. And anybody who knows me well knows that my first and favorite stories were soap operas. And then mystery novels. And then I became a journalist and I told stories as a newspaper reporter. Then I became a lawyer and told a lot of stories for pay. And then I wrote a little bit of fiction along the way. And somehow or another, I stumbled into playwriting because I really like telling stories where the emphasis is on people talking as opposed to maybe being a screenwriter where it's more action necessarily than people talking to one another.
So you enjoy the dialogue and interaction. Okay, Teresa Lagarde, how did you come to be a playwright? You were our guest a couple of months ago here on Urban Connections.
Yeah, I was a poet first and became a playwright, I guess, in Kansas City, also through UMKC and a playwriting course there with Frank Higgins. But I like to listen. I think I've always liked to listen to people talk. I like to hear conversations most of the time, the ones that I'm in, sometimes not ones that I'm in, but I'm listening anyway. And I enjoy the rhythm of dialogue, and so it was something that I wanted to try out. Poetry is a different kind of storytelling where we maybe start from a bigger place and narrow down until we get to this really distilled truth about life. But playwriting, what I love about it is that it goes straight to the point. The dialogue, again, is what moves the story along, and not action necessarily, but action that is created by conversation. So, yeah, I thought it was something that I would like to try, and I tried it, and I'm hooked. So
plays are different. You know, experiencing a play, I think, is different, certainly more organic way to experience, to have an experience of that type. And it's like when you do a play, you sort of walk into a life or organically. How do you know where to start? How do you know where to begin the story of the play?
You start when it gets interesting.
Okay, Michelle.
That's a good point.
I mean, when you're thinking about the story, it's sort of like when you're talking to a friend and you're telling them something. You usually don't spend time telling them about all the boring years that led up to how somebody slapped somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of go right into the story.
And you start with the slap.
You start with the slap, and then you work the backstory in.
And okay,
not
so
that I see a lot of people slapping one another, for the record.
It happens, and you never know. But okay, so then after you think of that exciting moment and you walk everybody into that moment, where do you go from there? What is the process? Is there a straightforward, structured process, or are there different ways to come to the telling of the story? Cynthia?
Well, for me, I believe the characters tell the story and end up telling you what's going to happen and what you want to reveal in the play, the truth of the play.
When you develop characters, do you have an image in your mind of the character, what they look like, what they're wearing?
I do.
You do?
I do.
Do you ever is it a surprise all the time? Do you edit it? How do you do your characters?
I try not to edit it. I try to keep it as true as to the character that comes to me. But it is quite surprising sometimes when you're casting, you may have to edit.
Yeah. Who's your favorite character, Cynthia, that you have ever created, and what was their mission? What was their purpose?
My favorite character. I would say my favorite character, I have a short play called Jack and Jill. Mm-hmm. And there is this little mother who is has Alzheimer's, dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that play, she's trying to make sure her daughter is taken care of and finds a mate. And she just does it in such a lively way. So that's my favorite character.
I'm
attached to mothers, am I right?
Yeah, that's safe to say.
Do you know somebody like her? Or where'd she come from?
No, I know no one like this mother. She's a combination of all the different women in my life. So.
Absolutely. Tracy, you were going to say something about Cynthia's propensity to showcase mothers. Oh, that was Teresa.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, and even with our current French production, Girl on Girl, Cynthia's play, Dueling Doulas, addresses a mother who's a very strong matriarch and a soon-to-be mother, the daughter-in-law of a character. So, we definitely continue to bear witness to Cynthia's amazing stories and her passion to put motherhood on stage.
Okay, I want to talk about the current productions coming up at the Fringe Festival, and you're calling it Girl on Girl. What does that mean? What's the nature and the structure of what you're doing at the Fringe Festival?
You know, it pretty much boils down to is you got three girls, three women, and playwriting is dominated by males. There are a lot of female playwrights, but it's very much dominated by males. And so the three of us became friends. It just sort of developed into a friendship, and we decided what would happen if three women came together to put stories in 1 hour, and Girl on Girl, three quickies in one night.
Okay.
Is both provocative and yet just is exactly what it is. It's just a girl story on top of a girl story on top of a girl story. It's just three quick stories.
Written by women.
Written by women.
Okay. And what's the length or time-wise of these three shows?
Roughly 15 to 20 minutes apiece, depending on how much laughter we get from the audience. We had our opening show in the Fringe Festival today at 2:00.
Yes. And how much laughter did you get?
We got a lot.
We got a lot to laugh.
Yes.
Okay, so you must be dealing with some truth, because that's the funny
stuff. Yes, exactly.
That's the funny stuff.
Well, all right. Well, we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with playwrights Cynthia Hardiman, Michelle T. Johnson, and Teresa Lagarde. They are, I want to say, I keep wanting to say airing their production. What's the correct? They're doing their production. They've mounted a production. Girl on Girl, a playing field production. Three quickies in 1 hour. And in parentheses, get your mind out of the gutter. And this is happening at the Just Off Broadway Theater, 3051 Central Avenue in Kansas City, Missouri. Online, you can find the schedule for the program. I see a link here, kc-fringe.ticketleap.com/girlongirl. And their performances July 19th, 20th, 22nd, 24th, and 26th. KCFringe.org is the Fringe Festival website. But we're going to talk some more about Girl on Girl when we come back. You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Wolf. Stay with us. We'll be back after this break.
Support for KKFI provided by Californals Restaurant, 4124 Pennsylvania in Westport. Californals in Westport's summer music calendar includes performances by Hearts of Darkness, Classical Revolution KC, The Girls of Westport, and New Common Ground Knowledge. Show dates and more information is available at californals.com.
You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donald Wolf, joined in studio today by local playwrights Cynthia Hardiman, Michelle T. Johnson, and Teresa Legard. And they have mounted a production. They are mounting a production at the KC Fringe Festival. It's called Girl on Girl, 3 quickies in 1 hour. Get your mind out of this gutter. And more information at kcfringe.org. So the 3 quickies that you're going to perform are Dueling Doulas by Cynthia Hardiman, To Bed by Teresa Legard, and Riding Backwards by Michelle T. Johnson. So, Cynthia, Dueling Doulas, first of all, tell our listeners what a doula is.
A doula is a person that comes in that helps the mother-to-be transition through the various stages of child labor. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a nurturing type of person. And during that time, the mother-to-be is not necessarily quite there, mm-hmm. because of what her body's going through.
Right.
So the doula is there to make sure everything that the mother had planned to take place takes
Does
place.
Does take place.
Yeah.
But so is there more than one doula in this play?
There is one doula, okay. And there's a mother.
So they're dueling, or there's conflict?
When it comes to someone trying to usurp a mother's position, there's usually conflict.
I can see.
So that's the duel right there.
And your inspiration for Dueling Doulas?
Well, it's sort of my daughter had a doula.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of took it from that experience, how it wasn't conflict at all, but just the idea, the thought that there would be another nurturer nurturing my daughter through the birth of her child sort of created, I thought, would be a great, funny story.
Okay. The other part of Girl on Girl is the other one third is To Bed by Teresa Legard. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, To Bed is a snippet of a really long and ongoing conversation about women and sexuality and ownership. And the lead character, Grace, is at a crossroads of sorts, and we, through conversations between her own clothing, her negligee and her nightgown, are arguing about whether or not Grace should go all the way. And this is a conversation, I think, that is a very public one, unfortunately, because it is a very private decision.
Mm-hmm.
So brought some humor to this conversation that should be completely up to a woman, and yet is somehow, you know, the discussion fodder of any and everybody who has an opinion on the matter.
I see. And your inspiration, of course, just life.
Right? Yeah, kind of in general. You know, women having to validate themselves beyond this idea of chastity and purity, as if there's nothing more to a woman but that.
Mm.
Then that's not the case at all.
So what's the ownership aspect you mentioned of this?
Well, a woman owns her body, a woman owns her sexuality, a woman owns her virginity or her chastity to give to whom, you know, whom she pleases. And so that should be her decision and not anybody else's. And it's a decision not to be taken lightly, but it isn't the end of the world either.
Absolutely. And where's this valuation coming from? I mean, like, if you're, ruined or spoiled or besmirched,
mm-hmm.
quote, who's creating this value system?
Well, I mean, that definitely isn't coming from us. That is not coming from women. That is coming from, you know, a much larger patriarchal system that wants to deem us, you know, possessions to be transferred from one hand to another, which is just not the case.
Okay. Michelle T. Johnson has Riding Backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about Riding Backwards?
Well, it's funny because we all ended up sort of dealing with the different aspect of womanhood without consciously doing that. I think we consciously tried to do it, then we changed our mind, and then the stories we each decided to do ended up doing it anyway. So mine is on the romantic issue of womanhood. This is about a woman named Jonelle who is in a train station about to go to her ex-boyfriend's wedding.
Ooh.
And
as she's
making the decision, and she has this, in her relationship, this isn't, as I always tell people, it's not your typical, just your ex who you spend a few years with. They were childhood. They go back to childhood.
Okay.
There's a lot of family ties with that. And she's really sort of torn about she's going back home, but she keeps having these conversations with people in the train station that make her really think through that decision. Because, again, sometimes going home isn't always going home.
Once you leave,
yeah,
it's never the same to go back home.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we recreate our homes, but sometimes life makes you have to recreate your home, either because of loss, or breakups, or death, or all three.
Mm-hmm. So, three women writing plays. Do you think, or do women write male plays? Because, as Teresa said before, I think the theater industry, the playwright profession is, like so many, are dominated by men. And so you got male plays, I mean, predominantly. I'm sure most plays that have won the Tony or whatever, the classics, they're all written by men, which makes them sort of from a male perspective. Do women ever write male perspective plays, or is it possible for a man to write a woman perspective play? Like Carmen, that's an opera, isn't it?
A good playwright should be able to tell a story that is universal enough to reach whoever is in the audience. And mm-hmm. the perspective just maybe adds, pardon the pun, some color to how they tell the story, but I mean, you know, for example, the three of us are black women playwrights, but it's not like the only people we deal with in our lives are black women.
Mm-hmm.
We probably talk to more people in our lives when we go to work, when we deal with people who aren't black women,
mm-hmm.
which is why I think there's authenticity to our voices, because we have to hear other voices all the time. Whereas sometimes when I go to plays and people are writing about, not always, but majority folks are men are writing about other cultures or other life experiences, you go, do you know more than a couple of people? Because that voice isn't sounding like you know more than a couple of people. Or that you really listen to the other gender than what you are.
Okay. So then how do you judge a good play, Michelle? What's a
subjective? It's like a good book. It's like a good meal.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like it? Were you satisfied when you ate it? Would you recommend it?
Do you have a mission in your writing, in your playwriting, overall, overarching issue?
I just want to tell a good story about people that are real people. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much my mission.
Yeah. Do you think there is a larger audience now for live theater than there has been before, or, you know, and talk about, if you will, Kansas City's theater and arts scene for folks who don't know, folks who think there's nothing to do in Kansas City.
I find the theater scene here in Kansas City to be really lively, and I'm still very new to it, but there's always a show. And especially if you get to know people who are in theater, actors and playwrights and directors. We've got numerous venues. I mean, the Fringe is a perfect example. We have a 10-day festival with visual art and music and a ton of theater. with, you know, close to a dozen mm-hmm. venues. So there's the Met and just off Broadway and off Center Theater and the Coterie and the Unicorn and there's Space, there's the Phosphor Studio. There's so many places for these kinds of stories to come to life. So you know, anybody who has access to a to the internet can find theater in Kansas City. And a lot of it is reasonably priced, too, and I think that is nice as compared to some other major cities. I was looking into going to see something on Broadway when I go to visit some family back east, and the ticket prices are pretty mm-hmm. hefty. So that's another thing I think that makes theater in Kansas City very accessible. A lot of it can be pretty affordable, which I think is very important.
So what types, as a playwright, you know, it'd be interesting to know what types of plays you would want to see on Broadway.
Well, okay, this is a little bit sad. I was actually planning to go see Holler If You Hear Me on Broadway, which...
Why is that sad?
Well, because unfortunately the run has been cut short.
Oh, my.
I was planning to see it in early August, and at the last time I checked, the last date for the show, I think, is going to be July. Mm-hmm. July 20th or something pretty early. So, So that is unfortunate, but that is Broadway, and Broadway is an age-old institution with gatekeepers, and it just makes me feel even more thankful to be in Kansas City, where we have smaller theaters, where we have more adventurous creative direction, and people can try things here without, fear of being shut down like that.
Yeah, okay, so New York Times says, the Broadway musical... Holler If You Hear Me, inspired by the music and lyrics of the popular rapper Tupac Shakur, will close on Sunday after failing to attract theater goers after 6 weeks of performances. What do you think happened? There's no audience for Tupac, a Tupac musical. Did they mismarket it?
It's a couple of things. I mean, I have some friends in the East Coast who've seen it, mm-hmm. and they said, you know, a couple of unconnected people to one another said that the venue wasn't very good, that it should probably have been a more intimate venue as opposed to a large venue. Mm-hmm. And then we have to look at who the theater going public in New York City is.
Yeah, okay.
Generally,
who
honestly.
That? Who's that? Who are they?
Predominantly white people who can drop a lot of money for a ticket. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying it from a racism standpoint, but mm-hmm. just from a...
That's who it is, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I mean, just...
Okay. Well, we've got a caller on the line. Ladies, if you would like to hear what our community's thinking. Caller, are you there?
Hey, Donna. It's Drew and Elisa.
Yes, Drew. You got a question or a comment for our guests.
Yeah, I had a couple of comments. Well, one of them is, someone actually broke it down for me. Part of the reason why Broadway is so expensive is the wages those people who attend and do those productions, they get paid a living wage. They don't get paid a crappy wage for doing what they do. So it helps they actually are able to make a living doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. As far as Broadway right now, I mean, I looked at a paper a while back, and I was looking at the Broadway listings, and most of the shows were based on movies, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. Now, that tells you what area Broadway's in right now. They want to be very low risk. They don't want to take a chance on anything. I mean, look at Billy Elliot. One of the biggest successes out there was based on a movie, and so was Kinky Boots, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, like, and this is, I also think it might... as much as I hate saying this, I mean, it's New York, but it's New York with the Tupac musical. I almost feel like it would work better on the West Coast. I'm kind of divided. I wouldn't mind seeing it. There was a Broadway musical I wanted to see after hearing about it, and you can't find any of this stuff on DVD unless the thing was like a huge hit. I wanted to see Taboo after I saw one of these documentaries about it. The only way I can see this dragging myself over to New York, why not give us an option and put this stuff on the screen for people to watch. Why not record it, for crying out loud? There's a solution, too.
Okay, mm-hmm. Drew.
Talk to you guys later.
Thanks for calling.
I have to say that, though, but live theater, the whole purpose of live theater is that it is live. Yeah. And I think that is one of the reasons why you asked the question earlier, is how's theater doing? And, you know, theater's doing what theater's always done. It competes with other forms of entertainment.
Yeah.
I mean, theater is not TV. Theater is not a movie. Theater is not going to a club and listening to a band. I mean, theater is its own animal. And, you know, that's what I love about it. It's you're sitting on the edge of your seat as a playwright, and you're seeing your words communicated through other people, i.e. actors, who've interpreted through another person, i.e. a director, and mm-hmm. but you're still at the mercy of, but did the audience like it? As mm-hmm. opposed to if you write a book, you don't know what somebody thinks when they're at home by themselves in a bathrobe reading it.
So you get some immediate gratification mm-hmm. or not.
Mm-hmm. It's reinterpreted through the audience. And yeah. That's why if you ask an actor, no two performances are ever the same based on how the audience responds.
Well, Holler, it says, never brought in more than $175,000 a week in gross revenues. And last week, the show only grossed $154,948, or 17% of the maximum possible amount. So they only filled like 45% of the seats. And this was a an $8 million show. It was directed by the Tony Award winner Kenny Leon, A Raisin in the Sun, and it opened in mid-June, and in mid-July, it's out of there. So,
well, then even with reference to the director and A Raisin in the Sun, which is a brilliant play, but also a revival.
Yes.
And I think the caller made a very good point about Broadway wanting to be low risk. Mm-hmm. I think the same thing is true of the film industry. It's why we get bombarded with franchises, and why you can't see a movie that's not going to automatically have probably two or three more parts. Yeah. Right? I can understand that the impulse to play it safe, but I also see the need for fresh voices and for new stories, and again, it makes me really thankful for opportunities like Fringe, and I think it's one of the reasons that we came together and formed the Playing Field to broaden the definition of a stage story, what narratives can be brought to people through theater.
And what narratives actually do get brought to mm-hmm. people. Well, if any of our listeners have a question or comment for our guests, Michelle T. Johnson, Cynthia Hardiman, and Teresa Lagarde, three playwrights who have mounted a production at the Kansas City Fringe Festival called Girl on Girl. It's three short plays, three quickies in 1 hour, and that's going to be happening at the Fringe Festival July 19th through the 26th. Information at kcfringe.org. But if you have a question, give us a call, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. I wanted to ask you, ladies, if you feel that there is a black arts movement, a black theater movement like there was back in the day, and if there is or not, is there a need for one? Because there was sort of a need for one back then. I'm talking about back in the day when, you know, James Brown said, you know, say it loud, I'm black mm-hmm. and I'm mm-hmm. proud, and, mm-hmm. you know, Stokely Carmichael and H. Rap Brown, and then Imari Baraka was writing, you know, Leroy Jones back at the time, Soul on Ice, Eldridge Cleaver, all mm-hmm. that was going on, and there was a movement back then. Is there a movement now, and do we need one? Anyone? Mm-hmm. Cynthia?
I believe in Kansas City.
I believe in Kansas City that there is starting to be a black theater movement, in the sense that you see more black faces on the stage. And what Playing Field hopes to do is to actually bring more black narratives to the stage. I think that with all of us wanting to support each other and to make sure that this presence continues in Kansas City, we're going to band together and make that happen.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we've got another caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
You are on the air at 90.1 FM. Please tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from.
Donna, this is Pat out in Lee Summit.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I'm real good. I am calling to find out how are we engaging young people to have a love for the arts and a love for theater, especially in the inner city, African-Americans. I'm just wondering, is anybody doing that? Or just because I know that young people need to have that exposure. So just wanted to know.
Okay. I also want to mention Pat is a super RN. She trains doulas, right, Pat?
Yes.
Awesome. And,
well, no, I don't train doulas. I work with doulas.
She works with doulas.
And I have a mentor, so, uh-huh. Yeah.
So, yeah, I just wanted to mention that. And
cool.
Who wants to take Pat's question?
I will. I don't know all of the ins and outs, but I am aware of two summertime opportunities for kids that I can think of. Free Will, or KC Shakespeare Festival, has a youth component that I know children can be involved in and can learn about Shakespeare, and there are child actors who mount a youth production of the same production that is happening in the summertime. And then the Coterie also is theater for kids, and I know that they offer a lot of shows that children who are homeschooled come to the Coterie in large groups, summer camps and field trips in regular public schools. They bring the kids to the Coterie to see shows, and that's one of the places where they are introduced to it. Those stories are very accessible. Oftentimes they're spins on fairy tales or familiar children's stories, and it's a great time, and it's only, the shows are typically about an hour, so, you know, not a full length play, but it's a place to start, because I think theater, like some other art forms, can be intimidating to people, you know, if there's a quote-unquote highbrow perception of it. But theater is the people's art. It's for the people. And the history of theater was really just people gathering around, acting a fool, telling stories. So I think if we can get the pretension out of it and make people comfortable with it again, starting with children, then we won't have to worry about, oh, you know, is the future of theater stable? Because people will have memories of, I remember going to the Coterie and seeing The Wiz, and that was hilarious, and I need, you know, to make sure I go there again.
Yeah, and yeah, and yeah, absolutely. We've got another caller and one holding, so caller who's holding, please hold on. I appreciate it. Caller, right now, you're on the air. Yes.
Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Brother Ron here from South Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just listening to you, ladies, and thinking back to my life and how important it was to have theater. Once upon a time, Donna, you remember a group around here called Ebony Players or something?
I do remember Ebony Players.
When I first came to town, Cheryl, I think was her name.
Okay.
But then they left. But young children being engaged in theater and having thespians and actors and places where they could begin to develop, I think that's missing around here. Now, I'm older, so I wouldn't be out there in the younger group, but I don't see that happening in our youth. And the arts money that's available when you have theater and engage our kids in productivity. I know growing up, I had the fortune of being around, like, Ruby D, who just died.
Wow.
And Ozzy, we were kids, we didn't even know they were famous. But they was teaching us theater and stuff, and also grew up in their show with Richard Roundtree, who went on to become Shaft.
Yes.
And we had a lot of things that pulled us into wanting to be involved in that industry. I don't know if, because we're out here in the Midwest, I don't see it, but I know a lot of our young people, all these parks we had out here, and we put up tents and had theater. And matter of fact, I did see some Shakespeare over on the west side of town one night.
Mm-hmm.
I never seen nothing like that on the east side over here. So,
but a lot of that is we have to take responsibility and do that. I mean, there has to be people in our community who decide that's important and do it. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, Don, I work at a private school. And at my private school, the parents make sure that their kids are exposed to different kind of arts. And on the one hand, you can go, well, that's because they have the money. Well, a lot of arts don't take a lot of money. And back to what you're saying, I mean, people can always get together in a park and tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and we got plenty of parks.
You got plenty of parks. You got plenty of people always wanting to run their mouths, tell a good fish story.
Right. And you haven't seen anything until you've seen African Americans doing Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
so it takes them to another level.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you, ladies. And I'm going to be looking out for opportunities for young people where we can get them engaged in theater instead of crime.
Awesome.
Because I think it would help develop them a great deal.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother.
God bless.
816-931-5534, 816-931-KKFI. We did have another caller that I think has, the line has dropped, so feel free to give us a call back, 816-931-5534, 816-931-KKFI. Ladies, we're going to take that 4:45 break right now, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with local playwrights Cynthia Hardiman, Michelle T. Johnson, and Teresa Legarde, mounting the play production Girl on Girl, three short plays in 1 hour, three quickies in 1 hour. Taking place at the Fringe Festival in the coming week. You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Maybe we ought to start thinking and acting like we're in a moment of crisis. You know why I think we ought to start thinking and acting like we're in a moment of crisis? Because we're in a moment of crisis, y'all. And look, it is true. It is an ecological crisis. It's not coming. It's here and going to get worse until we interrupt it.
Tune in to the next forum where we'll hear from lawyer and political activist David Cobb as he discusses everything from corporations to human rights, only here on 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Wednesday at noon.
FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, Urban Connections with your host, Donald Wolf, joined in studio today by three local playwrights, Cynthia Hardiman, Michelle T. Johnson, and Teresa Legarde. And Cynthia, you wanted to mention what you have coming up, some events coming up after the Fringe Festival, correct?
Yes, I have a play being produced by Melting Pot KC at the Just Off Broadway Theater in February, opening their 2015 season. And the gentleman earlier was mentioning young people and theater, and I think it would be it's going to attract that audience to the theater. It does have some hip hop in it, and it's centered around the story of young people, so I'm hoping to engage that audience, that younger audience.
Younger audience, okay. That was me trying to get that other call that was coming in, and I keep losing it. Don't give up, caller. Give us a call back, 816-931-5534, 816-931-KKFI. And Michelle and Teresa, you have upcoming events other than the Fringe Festival.
I have a play that comes up, Melting Pot, Kansas City Theater Company is also doing a play of mine called Echoes of Octavia, and it is August 7th
through August, I think, 24th. It's the first. It's the first three weekends of August. And I just really want to speak on Melting Pot because it's a theater company started by Harvey Williams, who's a local African-American actor who really saw that we need to have more multicultural diversity in our theater companies in Kansas City. So he is a great person for wanting to make sure that stories of by all kinds of playwrights get out there. So Echoes of Octavia is a family story. It's a story that is about a woman who co-owns a restaurant with her father and is making a decision about following her passion versus following loyalty to her family. Mm-hmm. And it's something that hopefully people will all relate to.
Oh, that's a tough one, I know, from personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and we all have that.
Yeah. Okay. Echoes of Octavia, and that sort of harkens back to Octavia Butler.
It's funny you say that. Yeah, the main character works for, I shouldn't say works for, she runs a restaurant called Octavia's Diner, named after her mother Octavia, but her opportunity is to write a book on her favorite author, Octavia Butler, the science fiction writer.
Okay.
So Echoes of Octavia, basically, it's about the two Octavias that are kind of each whispering in her ear to take a different path.
That's interesting. Okay. And Teresa Lagarde, what do you have coming up after post-Fringe?
Post-Fringe. Well, no full productions, but I will be participating in the Kansas City Playwright Competition Project Playwright 3.0. So this will be the third installment of that, and it's happening in August. And I'm fortunate because both Michelle and Cynthia are veterans of said competition, so I hope they'll give me some tips. And
Cynthia was the winner of the whole competition last year.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to try to bring home another championship for the playing field.
I'll explain what playing field is, and then Cynthia, if you will, tell us about winning that competition last year. What is Playing Field Productions?
Playing Field Productions is the three of us playwrights have decided to come together and support one another in our work and to produce things together to put out into the community.
Okay, and production, that entails, finding a venue, building a set, casting an act. What all does that entail?
Well, yeah.
Everything. And that makes Fringe really special because this is our first production as a unit, as the playing field, and we get a chance to see from start to finish what it takes to mount a production. And Fringe is a very accommodating a very accommodating experience for us to figure all of that out so that we can take all of the knowledge that we've gained through this experience and on to the next one, whatever we can do to bring more stories.
So how do you get to have your play in the Fringe Festival?
Every year they announce that entries. Mm-hmm. Anybody that wants to, in the first 50 who have got their stuff together enough to go for it, and then there's usually some more people past that. So it's not juried Fringe like some cities have, where the plays are chosen by committee, but it's a committee of people who are self-starters enough to say, we want to do this, we're willing to put our pocket full of change on the line to do it. And it's a great opportunity for a lot of people to come together and bring their resources. I mean, by the end of the weekend, I probably will have seen 5 plays in the Fringe Festival, for the cost of what one play at a big theater would cost me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And do you pick the venue or does that gets... The Fringe group picks the venue, sort of schedules where stuff's going
to
be at.
It's basically their festival, and we get to be participants in their festival.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So about how many venues throughout the city are there?
I think it's about 11.
Something like
10
that.
10 or 11. I think by the end of the whole Fringe Festival, I forgot the number, but it will be several hundred performances of probably more than 50, 60 shows.
Okay.
All in so 10 days.
And this competition that you won last year, Cynthia, tell us about that. And in general, how do playwrights get their work out there? Is that entering competitions part of that process?
Entering competitions, yeah, that's part of the process. Writing and sharing your work with the theater community also gets your work out there and your name out there. Project Playwright 2.0 is a competition. It's intense. It's intense. What? It's five or six playwrights.
Five
playwrights come together to compete over two weekends, and it's
dueling plays.
Yes,
really.
Dueling plays, and it's you have 24 hours to come up with a play. There are actors that act it out, and there's an audience that watches and votes.
So do they
who goes through to the next round?
Do they give you a subject?
Mm-hmm.
They do. They give you prompts.
Wow.
Yeah, they
That's
give you.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And sounds very, very could be very intense and very,
yeah.
very challenging. So what did you come up with in 24 hours?
In Project Playwright 2.0, well, the winning piece was about a returning soldier that had been hurt during a conflict, and it's about some who receive heroes' welcomes home and some who don't.
Okay.
So that short 10-minute piece was written in 24-hour period.
And are you so you're not competing this year or
I am not competing this year. I will be judging the first they have speed rounds where you have 60 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
60 seconds to write a piece that is then there's a panel of judges that judge.
So are you going to have to recuse yourself when it's Teresa's turn?
It's anonymous.
Well, it's
okay,
anonymous. No. I wouldn't know who the playwright was.
Okay,
oh,
that's good. That's good.
Okay.
All righty.
I didn't know I had that to look forward to. What I can write? Can't write my name in 60 seconds.
Be careful what you ask for. That kind of thing. So once again, if you would kind of recap what's coming up and how people might get in touch with you who are interested in seeing your plays. After the Fringe Festival, I know right now kcfringe.org is the best way to find out what's going on at the Fringe Festival. But if you will, again, just recap for our audience what you ladies, calling yourselves a playing field production group. The playing field production.
Well, you know, as my next play comes up next month, so if you just go to, I should know their website, but if you just Google, as I always tell a good friend of mine, Google everything, it comes up eventually, Melting Pot Theater in Kansas City, and you'll find out how to get tickets to Echoes of Octavia, and after that, my next play is in Philadelphia, so unless you have Philadelphia listeners, I don't think I need to give that information about that.
Broadcast globally. So where in Philadelphia are you going to, you know, on the web? Where are you going to be, what are you going to be doing in Philadelphia?
I just had two plays of mine in a Philadelphia theater, done by a Philadelphia theater company,
wow.
Brain Spunk Theater, and they have picked me to be their playwright in residence, which means I have another play in their season next year.
So are you going to have to relocate to Philly?
My plays, I'm going to relocate for a couple of weeks, but other than that, I am Kansas City.
A couple of weeks.
Yeah, bound.
Were these works solicited and then they made a choice or what?
You know, my earlier works is just, it's just someone solicited some work, they liked my work, they ended up producing it, and then they liked what they produced, so they asked me to do some more work.
So one just has to get oneself out there and start doing it, right?
It's like everything in life.
That's true. Absolutely.
Right.
Okay. Cynthia, did you talk about what you had coming up after Post-Fringe and all that?
Post-Fringe?
Yeah.
Melting Pot KC is also producing a play of mine called Truth Stands at Just Off Broadway Theater. It will be February of 2015. And it's, like I said, a story that about a young person who relates to the world through hip-hop.
Okay.
And his search.
Okay. Teresa? You?
Nope. Okay. I'm going to be fringed out after the end of next week, so I'll just be waiting for Project Playwright 3.0.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, ladies, for being our guest here on Urban Connections today. 90.1 FM local playwrights Cynthia Hardiman, Michelle T. Johnson, and Teresa Lagarde. Girl on Girl, three quickies in 1 hour. That's three short plays in 1 hour coming up at the Fringe Festival in the coming week. And I want to remind everybody to please stay tuned at the top of the hour for Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you for having us.